If you could darken the sky during the day today, you'd see that the sun is located in front of the constellation Pisces. The sun is now said to be in Pisces. But this point in Pisces, where the sun is at the vernal equinox, is called the first point in Aries. It got its name 3,000 years ago, when the sun really was in Aries at the time of the equinox. Today, as we said, the sun is in Pisces because Earth has shifted with respect to the star background. About 5 centuries from now, the sun will reach the boundaries of Aquarius at the time of the equinox, and what's been called the Age of Aquarius will begin. For March the 20th, that's star date. Our show is written by Deborah Bird and produced for the University of Texas McDonald Observatory. We're in Austin, Texas, zip 78712, and we welcome your cards and letters with questions on astronomy. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Guys just left here and 2 more guys come in.
Yeah, and they're us.
It kind of sounds like something cable news network would do, huh?
Shifts of 2, they say. You know, people come in pairs and leave in pairs.
Co-anchors. Do they come in apples and stuff?
No.
Which reminds me, I never did get my frozen banana tonight.
Oh, we forgot about those. Oh, not a whole night shot now.
Okay, well, we might as well get the sign-off cart. Do we still have that in
Take
here?
Take the station off the air. Without my frozen banana, I'm just not the same person.
No, I guess we're not. Whatever happened to the station sign-off cart?
WUSB, Stony Brook.
No, not that one.
That's wrong. You got the wrong thing there. We don't want to hear that.
Well, if
Look,
we can't
I'll survive without my frozen banana. I'll make an attempt to.
Okay, well, just...
Because I know I can get one tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Are you going to get me one, too?
If you're here.
Okay.
But I'll be here, and I'll get one, and I'll be happy.
Okay. Well,
I look forward to
it. The voice is the program of Long Island.
No, the voice of Long Island is the program.
Something like that.
And you're Mike Juhas.
And you're Eric Corley on the other side there.
We're here with you until 3 o'clock.
In a rub-a-dub style-y.
Yeah, doing all kinds of crazy nutso things.
Yeah.
We have tonight all... A variety, a hodgepodge as usual.
This time I think we're a little bit more of variety.
Probably. A lot of electronic things like that.
Yeah.
That's nice. We have an interview
with
the one and only Gene
Roddenberry.
Creator of Star Trek.
Star Trek, yes.
And Mr. Dave Goodman spoke to him earlier this week. We'll be broadcasting that coming up really soon.
Yeah, that's one good thing about this program, because over the next few weeks, I think we're going to be getting into more and more things that other USB staff people present to us.
That's right.
And so here's another example. We started off with playing some stuff with Barry Reagan's, right?
There's, if I can use strong language, a heck of a lot of talent on this station.
I think we can go further and say... Go even stronger and say there's darn of a lot of talent around here.
Please don't do that.
Okay.
It's a heck of a lot of talent. It's not, you know
that
FCC might be listening.
That may be pretty risque in its own right.
Well, gee willikers, anyway, there's a lot of talent on this station.
Shucks.
And we feel that the voice of Long Island is the medium to give that talent.
Yes. We've been discussing this over the last couple of weeks. Only problem is we never told anybody, so it'll take us a while.
Well, we just have a way of assuming that people know about it.
Yeah, clairvoyantly, you know?
There are all sorts of things that we assume that we don't really...
I once knew a girl named Clairvoyant.
Okay. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, so tell me, what else is new on the radio dial these days?
What else is new besides Beyond the Border?
Yeah, that's an interesting show.
I liked it.
It's going to have great, far-reaching possibilities.
I'll bet a lot of people who are into that show are still there, and they're listening to this show now.
Yeah, so?
And they're saying, what's going to happen next?
No, they're asking what's going to happen next. Unless they know... Oh, are they saying what's going to happen next? Okay, tell us, what's going to happen next?
No. Well, they might be saying it, they might be asking it, they might be demanding to know.
Okay.
Our guests... Well, no, we do have an idea of where we're going.
Yeah.
We know we're going to be having an interview with Gene Roddenberry. We're going to...
have another Adventures of the Tripod.
Oh, yes, later on. We'll be discussing quite a few pertinent topics.
We're going to be getting to an interview that had been originally broadcast on Consider the Alternative.
That's right. Not an interview so much. It's just a talk,
about
a speech, actually,
this one particular woman.
It was on the last edition of Consider the Alternatives, and I thought it was simply
what
excellent.
Woman's name?
I don't have it. She was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you all the details on that as soon as I go into the other room and get them a little later on.
So all sorts of neat things going on this part of the radio dial.
Yeah, we might be calling up people. We might have people calling us.
That's true. We may call other radio stations. That's always fun.
They may call us.
Yeah. Did I tell you that last night I was listening? I was just going through the FM dial, and I was down way down on the lower end, even lower than USB. And now that's going pretty low.
That's pretty low.
And you can pick up sometimes the audio for Channel 6.
Yeah. Well, in fact, you always can if. That's Channel 6 in your area.
Right.
Well, if you're near a cable feed.
Yeah, that's true, too. However, is there a Channel 6 in our area? Not in the immediate vicinity.
Well, I always used to get either a Channel 6 from Rhode Island or a Channel 6 from Philadelphia.
Rhode Island, that's funny you should mention that, because I'm going up there Tuesday. But I'll have to check it out when I'm up there.
Yeah, it's WPRI, I think. It's interesting, because there used to be a CBS affiliate, and then now they're an ABC affiliate.
Ooh, they switched.
And?
They pulled the old switcheroony. Huh?
Vice versa. The ABC affiliate is now a CBS affiliate.
Ooh, and that's very interesting.
Oh, wait a minute. I've got it backwards. That was Channel 12, WPRI. Channel 6 is WTEV. New Bedford, Providence.
In any event, I was listening to the audio from a Channel 6 in Philadelphia, which was?
WPVI, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And it was really kind of neat.
I wish I could remember history like I remember call letters of stations.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a sec.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What they were doing was they were saying they had the news, and it was a live report from the Philadelphia International Airport. And it was really kind of neat because they must have been doing it on a payphone or something like that, because all of a sudden you hear two touch tones go, doot, doot. And then you heard some talking. It sounded like an operator or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
Please deposit 10 cents.
Be interrupted. But I was quite surprised at that. It was very interesting to listen to the local news of the Delaware Valley down there.
Uh-huh.
What else is down there? Channel 17's down there. You get them occasionally up here.
I can get them on a cable.
Mm-hmm.
Cable feed.
Yeah. But you can sometimes get them, free air radiation.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was about 5 or 6 years ago, is that a picture of Lou Stevens with Bob Dylan?
Yes, it is. I told you about that before, didn't I?
Wow, I didn't see that before. A picture of our own Lou Stevens standing right next to Bob Dylan with a Channel 4 microphone between the two.
Yeah.
That's a strange-looking picture, too.
It is.
And our own Norm Preslin in another picture with Bob Dylan.
Right.
Holding a gun?
Oh, no, no.
Well, someone drew that in. That's not funny. Anyway, standing in a crowd, that kind of picture.
It's not important.
No. Yes, about 5 years ago or so, I used to collect TV stations, or collect radio stations, both, actually.
Uh-huh.
I'd sit around, tuning the dial, and waiting for stations to come in. And I guess I was lucky because I had a good antenna.
Uh-huh.
Because I used to pull in stations from all over the place. Especially Channel 6s.
Really? Yeah, okay. Because there were no Channel 6s in New York.
I got a Channel 6 in Paducah, Kentucky.
Did you really?
Yeah, that was wild.
What was their call sign?
WPD something. PDH, maybe.
PDK?
Something like that. But anyway.
PDQ?
Yeah, that would be a good one. Over the summertime, they have this thing called Skywave Interference.
Yes.
and channels 2 through 6 go totally haywire. You
That's
can't get
true.
A thing
That's
on them. Even if you have cable sometimes, you can't get a thing
That's
on them.
That's very true.
And you pick up the strangest stations.
Yeah.
I got a tornado warning on channel 3 once. KMTV out of Omaha.
KM?
Yeah, and then I got something from
St. Louis. Wait, two letters?
KMTV.
Okay.
Not KM-TV, KMTV.
TV. I wonder if they had an FM affiliate, what they would call it.
KMTV FM. I don't know.
That's an interesting food for thought.
Yeah, but I kept a list, a log of all the TV stations that I got. And I got quite a bit of...
I don't have such a great antenna. This one morning, I flipped on my radio, and I was listening to WGBH in Boston.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty good shot. That's like about 140 miles. And that same morning, they're at 89.7, so I moved up to 90.1, and, you know, here I was listening to classical music, and I just assumed it would be USB. But come to find out, it was a station from Portland, Maine, WMEA.
You were getting Portland, Maine, and
yeah.
You thought it was USB?
USB wasn't on that morning,
apparently. Oh.
Having some kind of transmitter or personnel problems.
Oh, I see. That's interesting.
It was very interesting. Maine. Yeah, that's the farthest I've ever reached on the FM band. It was a great day for long-distance shouts.
I picked up Philadelphia.
And Philadelphia sometimes picks us up.
Yeah, I wonder if Maine ever picks us up.
I wonder.
Oh,
I wonder when WMEA goes off the air if they pick up WUSB. It's an interesting... When we stop talking, if you've ever heard of us, or heard us, up in Maine, well, give us a call. If you're up in Maine now...
If you're going up to Maine sometime soon, give it a try.
And take our bumper stickers with you.
Yeah. Someone saw a USB bumper sticker in Virginia.
Really?
Yeah. A town with a really funny name.
Oh?
I forget the name. It was a two-word name. And I forget the name of it. It was a strange name. But I forget what it was. They said they saw a USB bumper sticker there.
What other TV stations did you find?
Let me think. A couple from Pennsylvania.
You said you had a whole list on your wall.
Well, yeah, I did. I don't know where the list is now, but I used to attach index cards with Scotch tape, and they sort of, like, hang down. I was kind of fanatical about it, actually.
Yeah, well, people do it for ham radio stations. They QSL with one another. I guess that's the three-letter word they use when they respond back and forth.
I never responded to a TV station. I didn't feel the need to.
What about FM stations? What's the longest shot you've ever gotten on FM?
Like I said, about Philadelphia or Massachusetts a couple of times.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that.
Of course, AM, there's nothing really...
Oh, AM. I got WBAP out of Fort Worth, Texas once.
Really?
Yeah, that was fun.
Oftentimes, I'll be driving in my car listening to WTOP in Washington.
Yeah, and I've gotten stations from the Caribbean.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well.
And a couple of times, I received Harmonix, which is like a bounce down of shortwave, and I get Radio Europe, Radio Free Europe or something, which was a surprise on the AM dial.
It's funny listening to certain places like landlocked areas like Cleveland. I was listening to a Cleveland station one day last summer, I guess it was one night, and they were saying how... Normally, you'd expect somebody around, a radio station around here, to say, well, it looks like a marvelous day we're going to have tomorrow, a beautiful day for the beach. Well, they said, well, tomorrow's going to be a beautiful day for the park. It's just the wildest thing. I don't know. Growing
That's
up
kind
in
of
the
sad not to ever be near an ocean.
Yeah.
A lot of people live their lives out without ever seeing one.
Yeah.
Strange. Very strange.
Not the only thing that's strange, not living near an ocean.
Yeah. A lot of people don't ever live near electronic sounds, either.
That's true.
Well, do you want to get into the Gene Roddenberry interview?
Well, can we wait a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Okay.
Flexible.
The number here is...
246-7901.
And the area code is...
516.
Yes. So, what is this stuff we're listening to in the background?
This is some fine electronic music from the Nonesuch label.
Right, the new Nonesuch Guide to Electronic Music.
It's not so new anymore, though.
Well, it was when it came out.
An album like that, you know, the title becomes outdated.
2467901, the program, the voice of...
Long Island.
I'm Mike Uhas.
I'm Eric Corley. Hello. This is David Goodman for WUSB Stony Brook. With me in the studios today is Gene Roddenberry.
Widely known as creator and producer of Star Trek, the TV series and movie. Welcome to Stony Brook, Mr. Roddenberry.
Thank you. Delighted to be here. Beautiful day.
Yes, it is, isn't it? My first question, of the many artistic hats that you wear, author, director, producer, which one do you consider yourself first and foremost?
Writer.
You consider yourself a writer?
To me, that's basic to everything.
Mm-hmm. And after being a writer, would you consider yourself a producer or a director?
A producer. I've done very little directing. I really think of the producer as not a so much a business role as part of the storytelling job. So I am a storytelling producer. And as the producer, particularly in television, I'm responsible for mm-hmm. opticals, costumes, and many other things.
Mm-hmm. How have you always been interested in storytelling?
Yes, very much so, since a child, I should say.
Mm-hmm. In terms of being an author or director, what would you rather be known for in terms of the public? Or what do you think the public thinks of you?
I was a great lover, but I never made it.
Okay. When you began your professional career as a writer late in the 1940s, was your objective then to write for TV?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when I really got serious about writing, television had just come out, and they had these sets you bought for $900, which had a little tiny 6-inch screen. And I think some promise in it, being able to look at the future, because it occurred to me that this really was the storytelling medium and the communications medium of the future. It immediately seemed to me that it was probably as important a revolution as the Gutenberg press, and so mm-hmm. This is where I headed immediately.
Mm-hmm. Was one of your objectives to write science fiction at the onset?
No, and I don't really consider myself a science fiction writer today. I am a writer. I think it's wrong for writers to carve themselves up and say, I write science fiction or I write detective stories. To me, as a writer is a writer. Science fiction is something that all writers should look into, because there's just no more marvelous way to make comments about a man in society.
Have you ever done any writing or producing for radio?
Never have, and I'd like to try.
It would
be great fun to have the theater of the mind. I've often thought I would like someday to do some Star Treks or something on that order for radio.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did say that you don't like to pigeonhole yourself into being considered a science fiction writer, but in 1954 you did sell your first science fiction script. Could you tell our listeners what that script was about?
Oh, you do good research. That was a story about a couple of aliens who we pick up as they are here in human form, and their job is really to see that this planet is destroyed because it's getting into nuclear weapons and so on before its time and before it's really ready for it. The name of it was The Secret Defense of 117, and the secret defense turned out to be this thing that we humans know as love, which their civilization did not have.
Mm-hmm.
And it starred, among others, Ricardo Montalban. And it was great fun, although I worked with Ricardo 3 or 4 times since, it was great fun to again see him on the set of our new Star Trek II movie.
Hmm. That's very, very interesting. Did that show appear on network television?
Yes, it appeared on Chevron Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then a number of other times. But in those days, residuals weren't that important, so I never really did get a list of everywhere it appeared.
At that time, were you thinking of Star Trek? Or was that still something, you know, way in the future?
I was not thinking of Star Trek specifically at that time, but I had made up my mind when the time was right that I would do a science fiction, because what I had seen in science fiction up to then, I hadn't thought much of. It seemed to me they said that most film and image science fiction really violated the basic rules of drama, which are stories are about people. And science fiction writers and producers so often tried to make them about gadgets, and gadgets are not that interesting. And so mm-hmm. When I felt the time was right to come out with the science fiction series I'd been thinking about, I sat down and did the Star Trek introduction.
Mm-hmm. As an award-winning author, what can you suggest to young, just starting out writers, science fiction writers?
Write.
Just to keep writing.
Really, write. Write like 500 words a day, every day. Whether you've got a cold, whether you feel, particularly if you don't feel like it, keep writing.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, assuming you have good average intelligence and you are an omnivorous reader, why, you undoubtedly will begin to sell. Thank God most people give up before they get there. Otherwise, we'd be up to our knees in writers.
Mm.
And most people do give up.
Mm.
But the trick is not to.
Okay. When 1966 did roll around and you created Star Trek, my question is, why did you create Star Trek? Was there a certain purpose other than just creating a new television series?
The primary thing I had in mind was I wanted to do something where I wasn't trapped by the terrible censorship which was going on in television at that time, where you really couldn't write about anything of any importance. And it seemed to me that I might do what Jonathan Swift had done when he could not write about his times. He invented Gulliver's Travels and got away with it. And sure enough, by putting them out, by having little polka dotted people out on far-off planets, we got it past the network censors. They didn't know what we were talking about. All the 14-year-olds did, but it went over their heads.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I noted in reading biographies about you that you were a commercial pilot.
Right, Pan Am.
Did your experience as a pilot influence your creation of Captain Kirk, let's say, as the pilot of a starship?
Oh, yes. I think undoubtedly the bridge was run in a much more responsible, logical way than many other writers would have written it, because I had that experience. Also, I think it influenced Kirk. Yes, all writers' characters owe something to their secret dreams and longings. And Kirk was very much the captain that I dreamed of being, totally cool, totally right, totally capable. And, of course, no one ever is quite that. Mr. Spock came very much the same way. I had screwed up so many times in my life out of emotion, I thought it would be fun to write myself without emotion.
So what you're saying is that the several of the main characters are compilations of your own personalities trying to express themselves?
Somebody said years and years ago, I forget the author, but it said writing is very much a thing of masturbating in the public, in front of the public, and there's a great deal of truth in that. We all do it in all of our characters. Most writers who are not hacks, whoever they write, even a woman, is some piece of themselves or some piece of a dream self. You really, as much as an actor, when you write seriously, you become that character while you're writing it.
Mm-hmm. Do you look back at the old reruns and say to yourself, I wish there was something in particular I should have done differently?
Oh, God, yes. Because, you know, making those shows, anytime you make an action adventure, particularly when you add the opticals and new costumes every show, different foreign scenes and so on, sometimes it just seemed a bloody miracle that we had a beginning and a middle and an end there. And when I look back at the episodes, I used to do a great deal of writhing, saying, oh, Jesus, if we just had another hour, if we just had $600 more. But lately I don't so much, because I think I've developed a sense of... look, we did our damnedest. We did our best, and what we did, people generally like, and why not swing with that?
Mm-hmm. I've noticed in many of the episodes that you've either written or have been adapted from your stories that there's a very important social message being transmitted. For instance, such episodes as The Omega Glory, Bread and Circuses, and in particular Assignment Earth, where Gary Seven came down to try and prevent the Earth from destroying itself with nuclear weapons. My question is, how successful, in your opinion, has TV been in transmitting social commentary?
Well, TV should be much better than it is. It has been good. Star Trek, from the very first, did that. It wasn't just those shows. Much of it was very unnoticeable unless you probe, like Devil in the Dark. We had a very ugly monster we learned was a mother protecting its young. One of the basic themes of Star Trek all the way through is to look differently is not to be necessarily ugly, or to think differently is not necessarily to be wrong. We had, a few others have done it, where you have people who tried very hard, such as the Archie Bunker show. What was its original name?
All in the Family.
All in the Family. In fact, they showed not only him, but they also showed that liberals in Maude can often get as silly in their direction. I think that a show, the Barney Miller show, has nice little comments about society. And these shows invariably become the very, very popular show, the standards, the classics. Unfortunately, most of television doesn't make any effort to do that. For instance, most police shows, really, if there's any theme in it, is the best thing to do with criminals is to shoot them and put them in jail, something like that. Mm-hmm. The reason being, of course, that television is not basically an entertainment medium. Television is there to sell products.
Mm-hmm.
And what gets on the air is something that will sell more beer or more hemorrhoid ointment than the next show, which is patently a ridiculous way for a society to choose something as powerful as sound and image is. I think that someday we'll be very ashamed that we spent all of those years doing that. It hasn't always been like that because artists are really... Although they can be crackpots, lunatics, nasty, undependable, they all have that little thing about fighting to make something better. And we had enough of those in television that we kept it from being utterly bad.
Mm-hmm. Is there today, or should there be, a movement against the movement towards more commercials and more advertising?
Well, thank God our engineers have created a movement, and our scientists by... bringing us cable and satellite television. There's a whole telecommunications revolution going on in which we've discovered we can have thousands of channels if we want them. And the time is here now, and it's just beginning. And let me say to those interested in the arts and in telecommunications, boy, you couldn't get a better time to get in, because now what's going on with cable TV coming along is like the early days when I went into television, where there were openings, you could get in. So networks will soon be relegated to a much lesser piece of the pie. Eventually, we're going to have a type of television in which you can dial your phone or your computer hookup or whatever and order something out of an electronic library whenever you want it and have it sent directly to your house. You won't even have to keep the records or the tapes. And so this is helping a great deal. Sure, I don't know why the public hasn't stood up against the networks now. If you do a half-hour show, 7 or 8 minutes of it have become commercials now. My God, I remember when people objected when it was 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's 7 or 8, and they're not objecting. They have really been brainwashed into accepting it.
Mm.
Actually, I don't mind one commercial an hour. It's one thing I have against some of the pay TV is you never get an excuse to go to the bathroom.
That's true.
But other than that, I wish they'd do away with
it. You can't get up for a snack.
Yes.
Do you think that with these new technologies, for instance, being able to buy products through your TV set, do you think that will make people more prone to just sitting at home and just sitting in front of that TV? Do you think that's where the technology is leading people?
No, I think a great deal more of... I have a much higher opinion of the human animal than that. That, of course, is what some of the monks said in the beginning when they got the printing press. You know, you teach them to read, give them books, and forget it, they'll never go out again. And, of course... That doesn't happen. Young, alive, exciting people always have to get out and get with the world.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, if our television in future is what it should be, it would encourage them to get out, because the excitement of what's all around them is transmitted to them by the what they see on television.
Mm-hmm.
And that's of course what we people in the business that I'm in and that you're moving in, That's a responsibility we have,
mm-hmm.
and a serious one.
Mm. If you just tuned in, you're listening to WUSB, and speaking with me today is Gene Roddenberry. Mr. Roddenberry, I want to get back to a question I asked you before about TV's ability to transmit social commentary. Do you feel that science fiction, in particular, is the best genre to transmit social commentary?
Well, it certainly can be the most exciting, because rather than having problems with unbelievability in doing a story, by trying to fit things into a story today, in science fiction you can pick a subject and surround it with elements that really highlight the subject. You can, if you want to do a story of how bad prisons are, you can, as they did recently, make a prison city. And if you want to discuss, as we did, that to be different is not ugly, you have a better chance. Yes, it's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very exciting way to do that, I should say.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the recent influx of these B-grade horror movies? Why do you feel now, all of a sudden, Hollywood is producing all these movies?
Well, Hollywood has always done ridiculous things like that. That's because Hollywood is basically run by businessmen. Studios today are run by accountants, attorneys, agents, who in their own business are fine. But they gravitate to the top of these places, and they make movies on the basis of the way other businesses are run. If the product is selling high, why not make another one like it? Another one like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nothing new. And I'm afraid it will always be this way, at least under our present economic system.
Mm. In terms of the Star Trek series, does it surprise you when every year that the show's in syndication, new hordes of viewers tune in and become quote unquote Trekkies?
Oh hell yes!
How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I never expected any of these things to happen. I hoped when I wrote it, started writing it, and produced it at first, that you know I would meet people in years to come that would say, "Hey, that thing you did, I kind of liked it," and. But, wow, it got sort of ridiculous. People have asked me, you know, did you expect this when you wrote it? I said, what kind of an idiot would sit down and say, let's see, what'll I do this afternoon? Well, I think I'll create a phenomenon. You know, you just...
Do you feel you've left a legacy?
Well, the thing I like that we did is, number one, we showed a whole audience a positive, optimistic view of the future. We can make it.
Mm-hmm.
We this creature is really something. The other thing is our heroes were really almost old-fashioned heroes in their honor. They did not lie. They believed that there were some things you risk your life for. That isn't too bad to spread around a bit. The other thing is it did introduce science fiction to a nationwide audience. Parents being forced to see it by their college student children began to read some science fiction. It encouraged universities all over to require some science fiction in a sophomore year as sort mm-hmm. of a mind expander. And yes, it's nice to know that we did get people reading Huxley and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Clark, so on.
Mm-hmm. In terms of your own life, do you feel that your lifestyle has changed? Are you swamped on the street, you know, with autograph seekers?
No, I'm not like an... Actors have it tough. It's hard for Leonard Nimoy or someone like that to go down to McDonald's or Burger King.
Mm-hmm.
I have no such trouble. The only time I run into anything is at a gas station or somewhere. I'll give them a credit card, and they'll look at my name, which in the credit card is E.W. Roddenberry, and they'll sometimes ask, hey, do you know Gene Roddenberry?
Mm-hmm.
And I will invariably reply, one of the things I want most to do is to get to know him, which, of course, is a problem we all face with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. The first letter E standing for Eugene,
yes,
Roddenberry. If you allow me right now, I'd like to read a quote from a novel that you wrote. It's the novelization of the Star Trek Star Trek the Motion Picture, and I'd like to read a quote from your from your preface, in which you write, "I have always looked upon the Enterprise and its crew as my own private view of Earth and humanity in microcosm. During its voyages, the Starship Enterprise always carried much more than mere respect and tolerance for other life forms and ideas. It carried the more positive force of love for the almost limitless variety within our universe. It is this capacity for love of all things which has always seemed to me the first indication that an individual or a race is approaching adulthood." Well, that was written in 1979, and it's now 1982. Do you feel that our nation, our world, is making any strides in this direction?
Yes, we are making progress. We do make strides. I know it often seems like it's three steps forward and two back, and lately in this country it seems to me that we're on the backward steps with our fury over Central America and our paranoid fear that some bad outsider is really influencing things everywhere. But I think we do make strides. I think that also certain things happening today are going to push us forward, and in my talk here at Stony Brook, I address that particular subject, is are we going to make it, and what things will help us do.
Mm-hmm. Very recently, several actors and media personalities have gotten involved in politics. Is there any statements you'd like to make, or do you not get involved in the political scene? Or
I prefer to do my talking in books, and although on shows like this, I'll respond honestly to any question. My basic statement is that is what you read there, and adding to that, that we all have to bring these things about very definite personal responsibilities, and we have a responsibility not to be silent, and that's particularly true of people in colleges, I think. And I hope that we'll get eventually somewhere back near the 60s when people were speaking out and pointing their finger at hypocrisy when they saw it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any new books or new book to be published soon? Or
I have one I'm writing, which is a story of this country about 70 years from now, when we have lost our middle class, and the society is broken down into the people who are really the workers and the execs, and automation has really eliminated the middle class, which is a very interesting thing to think about and to write. I'm currently doing a pilot for ABC, which we're looking at the near future, 20, 30, or 40 years ahead, and we'll have a weekly look at it. And one of our first looks has to do with law enforcement. I see in it the police process breaking down, and I see the neighborhood watch becoming a more and more important thing, and in which we begin to take the responsibility for protecting ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like all writers, I always have two or three things in the notebook I'm jotting away on.
Mm. I just have one other question about this, about the series, which ran from 1966 to 1968, I believe. It's been compared to Horatio Hornblower. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, my Captain Kirk was very much based on the style of Captain Kirk was based on Hornblower. Of course, Hornblower, written by C.S. Forrester, who Hemingway called the greatest adventure writer in the English language. It has Hornblower's style, although Hornblower, the 19th century sea captain, of course, had nothing of Kirk's view of the beauty of aliens and the joy of diversity. Hornblower was rather a stuffy English sea captain who kind of liked when he got to be a sir and then a lord.
Mm-hmm.
But charming books, and I had Shatner read a couple of them before we started shooting the series, and he took them very much to heart, and I think that added a great deal to his performance.
That's very interesting. Speaking of aliens, what was there anything you used in particular to model your aliens after?
Budget.
Mm-hmm.
In the television series, we had all sorts of ideas for aliens, but we just couldn't afford the appliances and the time. Spock used to take hour 45 minutes to even get his ears on,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't have another $25 even to spend in the Star Trek, the motion picture. We, of course, changed our Klingons slightly. I told the director to, by all means, do what he thought was right, to, because we were no longer limited to
mm-hmm.
to actors who uncomfortable, you know, they always come with two arms and two legs, and they're very difficult to change.
Mm-hmm.
But I was amazed to see the fans, many of them rose up against, how dare you change our Klingons?
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of my first stories, I was going to have a little, the Talosians were going to be little crab-like creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably good that I didn't have the money to do things like that. I think the audience certainly was not prepared for that. Even having Star Trek with essentially 20th century heroes, my own father, he sat there the night the first show came on, and he listened to it very quietly, and then he went out and apologized to all the neighbors. So I think it's fortunate I didn't have a better budget.
Hmm. In terms of the third season episodes, 1968, was the budget really getting thin at that point? Speaking in particular of one episode, Spectre of the Gun, where the sets themselves were those old, you know, stick-up sets that Hollywood used to use, and I've heard talk that the reason those sets were used in that episode was because there wasn't enough money to build.
No, strangely enough, that was not the reason. It was really an effort to create a feeling of a dreamlike feeling where you didn't see every nail hole and every board.
Mm-hmm.
And dreams are sometimes like that. And I've heard many people say that, but really that was no problem because in those days we did have Western sets just sitting there to be used.
Mm-hmm.
But money was always a problem. I remember one show we had $243 left unspent, and it suddenly occurred to us we hadn't done the aliens yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told our then associate producer Bob Jessman that he had to do the aliens for $243, and he put his hand on his head and went running out screaming that I was crazy.
Mm.
But somehow our people always managed to do those things. They did it with sort of a little puppet thing.
Mm. I could just imagine you walking up to DeForest Kelly and asking him if he has any money, and he would say, I'm a doctor, not a millionaire.
He would indeed. I'm sorry they didn't do that in the first movie. I tried to get him to use that Kelly joke.
Mm. I just have one final question. Can you tell us anything about the new movie, the date it'll be released, and any backroom news that you can give us? And my question out of extreme curiosity is, will Mr. Spock die?
Okay, well, first on the movie, I've only seen a rough cut without many opticals and without sound and music and the final trims and everything, without the really magic that makes a picture come alive.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I have seen of it, it has much more action than the first movie. I think it uses the secondary characters much better.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, many of them have very, very important parts in it. We have the opticals should be very, very good because they're being done by the people who do the opticals, done all the opticals for Star Wars, all of
mm-hmm.
the Star Wars movies. I felt to me that some of the characters were perhaps a little too melodramatic, and some of the science wasn't taken as much care of as I prefer to do it when I do them myself. But on the other hand, some of the final effects will probably make it move much faster in there, and also I've given them memos on those things, and they are trying to straighten them out. I think it has a good chance of being a movie you like.
Mm-hmm.
About Mr. Spock, whether he dies or not, I must remind you I am in show business, and you're going to have to find out in the movie.
That's all right. Mr. Roddenberry, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today. You've been listening to Gene Roddenberry, award-winning author and producer. For WUSB Stony Brook, I'm David Goodman.
We're back live on The Voice of Long Island.
Yes, we are. And that was a very interesting talk with Mr. Gene Roddenberry.
Thanks to David Goodman.
It's 12:52
a.m. And what is that on the p.m. side?
On the p.m. side?
Yes.
That I don't know.
Well, all sorts of neat things happening. Should we allude to the conditions in here or no?
Perhaps.
Okay. First of all, we're on delay, I think.
Yes, we are.
Can we just hear ourselves? Yes, we are.
We are on delay.
Okay.
No question about that.
We got, we're preparing for the end of the world, as it were, in here.
Yes, we are. The end of the world is something that, that a lot of people are talking about for some reason.
Why is that?
I really don't know. Well, it seems to be in people's heads a heck of a lot more than it was, say, a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't think of a real reason for it other than increased paranoia.
Now, when they
refer to the end of the world, what means well, is this
actually
end going to be attained?
The ironic thing is, it's not really the end of the world they're talking about anymore. It's, well, maybe it wouldn't be the end of the world if we have a nuclear war.
Oh?
They're talking about ways to win nuclear wars
mm-hmm.
and things like that. In fact, I was in the store today, and I happened to pass by the magazine section,
mm-hmm.
and I just something leaped out at me, well, caught my attention.
A magazine?
A magazine called Esquire.
Mm-hmm.
And the cover this week says, if you survive the coming nuclear war...
Oh, they're so sure of it, huh?
Don't worry, our leaders have a swell plan.
I had to laugh when I looked at that.
With the little finger on the button?
Yeah.
Now, let me just turn to the right page here.
37.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I can't believe you memorized that. 37. There we are. Well, the specifics. Well, there's a little statement
here. You look kind of silly wearing a pair of headphones with a flashlight in your hand, you know.
Yeah, well, that's, we're all prepared here for the end. We have a stockpile of food in the back.
Right.
Stations totally locked up and radioactive sealed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can get to us.
Right.
We're away from everything.
Yes.
The most important thing to remember about a nuclear war
is
that it will not be the end of the world. Nothing gets in the way of responsible post-nuclear attack planning, like negative, unconstructive attitudes, such as those found in literature like On the Beach.
By Neville Shute.
Yes.
Great book.
130 million Americans might be dead, and another 32 million might be injured.
Uh-huh.
But the remaining 61 million healthy survivors can rebuild the country and live long, productive lives.
61 million?
Yes, if they use common sense.
Out of 220 million?
If they use common sense and follow government guidelines.
Can we just mention that book, On the Beach? You never read that, did you?
No, I never did. Did you?
Yes, I did. In fact, I read that when I was in high school, of all times.
Was it curriculum?
Yes, it was. In fact, they gave us a whole bunch of books to read, and you pick one, and I picked that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm glad I did, because it was a really very excellent book. It portrayed the lives of a few, I believe, Australians in their last final weeks on the face of the earth. What happened, there was a big... atomic blast or something like that, and there was an atomic cloud full of radiation that was coming to wipe out the world, and apparently Australia was the last area to be wiped out, and it was very interesting in how they were going to deal with their own personal demises.
Yeah.
All sorts of things like that. It's pretty interesting.
How long ago did you read this book?
This was about, I'd say roughly 8 years ago, something like that.
I read, I am reading right now a book by Robert Heinlein. It's the first book I've ever read by Robert Heinlein,
mm-hmm.
called Farnham's Freehold,
mm.
something like that. It's actually exactly about what we're talking about now. At first, we're introduced to a couple of people, actually a family, where the father is kind of paranoid as far as what the Russians are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a bomb shelter, and his son thinks he's nuts. His wife really doesn't care. But the twist in the book is that you see it happen. It really does happen. The bomb is dropped.
Mm.
And they're forced to go in their shelter, and they're running out of oxygen, and then they leave their shelter, and there's no sign of their neighborhood anymore. It's all wild.
Huh.
And they can't figure it out. It seems that they've been catapulted into another dimension.
I remember one about a year and a half, close to 2 years ago, listening to a program on USB called Planet 3.
And, in this time slot.
And you were the one who was responsible for that, weren't you?
I loved that show. I loved doing that show.
You had the Martian Chronicles, I think, Bradbury?
Well, in fact, it's funny you should mention that. I played something from... It wasn't the Martian Chronicles. It was...
It was about the house that knew everything and sensed that something was going wrong in a nuclear explosion. Maybe that wasn't it, but... do you recall the particular?
I wonder if we have that. That might have been what we played. That is a possibility.
Yeah, but it's an excellent little piece. It was about this house and its built-in computer talking. And by that point, everybody in it had perished.
I was thinking of Slaughterhouse-Five because I did play that.
Was that?
I played that this last Tuesday night. A portion from that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't believe that's the same story you're talking about.
Oh.
But there are so many things floating around today.
Oh?
I was saying before that, well, I used to watch television and listen to the radio and read newspapers and see how far I could get before I saw a mention of guns and violent crimes.
And you figured it was about 2 feet.
Not very far at all.
And now?
Today, I see all sorts of other things. How far can you go before someone starts talking about nuclear war?
That's right.
You can't go very far at all. It's in all the newspapers. Every day there's a new article about the impacts of nuclear war. More and more people are saying can happen afterwards.
The end of the world?
But the thing now
there's
is,
many ways.
It's not the end of the world for them anymore.
But that's not the only way the world will end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, it could blow up like Mount St. Helens is doing right at this
right
very
at this
time.
Right moment.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a couple of other things. Well,
some contingency plans, as well.
Post-nuclear attack procedures, in fact.
These are good, and these are real, too.
These are real. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has identified more than 400 regions likely to suffer nuclear attack in an all-out war. Now, people living under a direct hit will have nothing more to worry about. Those living elsewhere need worry only about fallout and society collapse. What else do we have? Houses and cars as fallout shelters. With a little effort and ingenuity, fallout shelters can be improvised at your home or place of work or under your car. Most schemes involve digging and piling up dirt, which absorbs gamma rays. Plans can be obtained from the Federal Emergency Management Agency now.
At your local store.
Be sure to take a battery-operated radio into your shelter with you so you can listen for additional government instructions.
Mm.
And perhaps the clincher...
Oh, yes.
...is relocation. Let me find the exact part of this that... That talks about, okay, following a nuclear attack on the United States, the U.S. Postal Service plans to distribute emergency change of address cards.
Which have already been printed.
This postage-free card,
great.
The Postal Service's emergency planning manual explains, would be used by displaced survivors of an attack to notify the Postal Service of their emergency mailing addresses. Now, the manual gives several examples of completed cards. One sample for a Mr. William Thomas Butler gives a pre-emergency address of Upton Street in Washington, D.C., and says that he can now be reached at Box 21, Leesburg, Virginia.
What's his zip?
Doesn't say.
Huh.
But the sample card filled out for Miss Mabel Jane Butler tells a sadder story. Her pre-emergency address, like Butler's, was on Upton Street in Washington. Her present address, however, reads, deceased. Mortuary number 10, Falls Church, Virginia, 22040. There's your zip code.
That's very interesting that they should give the zip code for a deceased person as opposed to one who's living.
It is.
His mail won't get
there. I don't know if Leesburg is an actual town in Virginia, is it?
It sounds familiar for some reason.
Lynchburg, I know.
Mm.
Where the moral majority is headed.
It's a very interesting article. We are reading from Esquire, this week's issue. well, this month's issue.
Yeah.
Sorry. March issue.
I don't know how long it's been out, but I just happened to be walking by. And the thing is, it was on my mind. That's why it really hit me, because, well, lately, everyone I know is talking about the same thing. And they're talking about it more and more as if it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something, I don't know, do we have the power to stop it? Or are we just going to sit back and let it happen?
There's a couple other things that you should do in the post-nuclear attack procedures. Money and sacred documents. If you are relocated, be sure to carry your credit cards, cash, checks, stocks, insurance policies, and will. Every effort will be made to clear trans-nuclear attack checks, including those drawn on destroyed banks. You will be encouraged by U.S. savings bonds. Did you read about Life Underground?
No, I didn't.
This is very good. It says, life will be difficult. Elect a shelter manager. Maintain order. Ration food. Stay inside. Follow war news. And consider the alternative.
Now, when they say consider the alternative, like that,
mm-hmm.
I assume they mean consider something else.
Being outside.
What we're telling you.
Yes, being outside, I think, is their alternative.
No, I think they're saying consider the alternative to that whole article, namely an alternative to having to go through that and do something about it now.
The alternative I think they're referring to is if the place is blown up all around you,
uh-huh.
and if you don't like it inside the shelter, you get out and, and get blown up with it. Just die from the radiation. It's very interesting. There's a list of stockpiled materials here that the government stashes. Cobalt, bismuth, castor oil, diamonds, iodine, and opium.
Now, why don't you go into the opium a little bit? There's something on the first page about...
Yeah, well,
especially how it would help that woman who was in the mortuary now.
Basically, what it would do would simply to kind of relieve your pain, put you out of your misery, as it were. Let's see. It is possible that the pain of Mabel Jane Butler in her last hours, or of any victim of a nuclear attack, will be eased by a stockpile of opium reserved by the government for use on just such an occasion. The National Defense Stockpile of Strategic and Critical Materials includes about 61 items, including sorts of things like aluminum to zinc, A to Z, and opium. The stockpile goal for each item is... what did it say for the goal of the stockpile goal here? In 1980, they had... goal of about 70,000 pounds of opium. That's what they wanted to have on hand. But in 1980, they figured it out. They needed 130,000 pounds of opium.
Uh-huh.
At that point, they only had 71,000 pounds of opium.
So
very interesting.
They're working to get that under control.
They certainly are.
It's good to know what all this... I'll be honest with you. I'm not happy at this moment with all this. I don't want to sound overly depressing, but...
Well, I'm not particularly happy myself, but what about the other people out?
Well, yes, we'd like to offer you an opportunity to give us a call and express your opinions. We don't want overly depressing, sounds to go over the air. We want some suggestions. What do we do? Okay, we're citizens here. We're people in the world. Everyone's affected by this. There's not a single one of us who is not affected by the decisions being made today. It's probably the most important question facing mankind in possibly all of history.
That's true. So the number here is
246-7901, area code 516.
And we'll see if we can take some calls.
Yeah, we'd be happy to. The decision is clearly ours. Do we have the power to do something about it? I think we do. I think we have done something in the past 2 years. I know in Europe they have massive demonstrations in the streets about disarmament. Does it get anywhere?
They're starting to have all sorts of massive demonstrations here, like this big freeze movement, right?
Uh-huh.
And are you familiar with that movement at all?
I saw a full-page ad in the New York Times yeah. for that, and mm-hmm. I was very interested in it.
Yes.
I haven't heard anything about it recently, but... Well, you probably know more about it than I do, because...
No, I don't really.
I just saw the ad.
Because all I saw is, I believe, the same ad, but in one of the very local papers around here.
Uh-huh.
And they just wanted to... It was a big, huge petition drive, apparently.
Well, that's good. Now, a lot of people say that doesn't mean anything. What's a petition going to do for you?
Yeah.
But it's a step.
Yeah.
It's a small step, but it is a step.
Now... Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be getting into that thing from the...
Well, we have a speech by Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's from Physicians for Social Responsibility. Now, this is taken directly from Consider the Alternatives, a program we broadcast yesterday afternoon.
Friday afternoon.
No, I mean Thursday afternoon, I'm sorry.
Thursday afternoon.
Called The Atom and the Church. It's very good. Now, I don't consider myself to be a religious person, but this is something that really hits no matter what your religion is, I think.
Yes.
So we'll be getting to that in a few minutes. And is there any other stuff here that's of interest?
I think that's about it.
More government stashes of cobalt. Did you read about castor oil?
Bismuth.
Diamonds?
Yeah, I don't know why. Do you know what bismuth is good for?
No, I don't.
Bismuth is the primary ingredient in some of those stomach medicines, you know, the pink-colored ones that kind of coat the inside of your stomach to relieve acid indigestion and stuff. Bismuth, yes. Pepto-bismuth.
All right, now what was the name of that? The Federal Emergency Management Agency?
Yeah, FEMA for short.
Well, what I would like to know is, do they really exist?
I don't know.
I'd kind of like to give a call to an information operator, perhaps in, I guess, Washington, D.C. would be the place where that would be located. And let's give them a call and see if the place actually exists. I'm sure it does, but I'd like to just know. And also, it would be a public service to our listeners, so that they can call up the Federal Emergency Management Agency and
ask them your own personal questions. Why don't we just try that now?
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, what Eric's trying to do is... by the way, Eric, I guess I should mention to you that phone line is turned off.
Oops.
You've got to start again. What Eric is trying to do here is... he just told you what he's trying to do. This little irreverent thing we're doing right now, it's about... 5 minutes past 1 a.m. This is the Voice of Long Island. I'm Mike Juhas. That's Eric Corley over there.
Okay, here we go. Hello? Is this Washington, D.C.?
Okay.
I'm looking for the number for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
That's
area code 202. So they are down there.
634-6660.
Area code 202.
We'll call them up later on.
Yeah, well, I guess they're not open now, but they should be if it, you know, emergency.
If it was an emergency, they should be open.
We have a lot more material to read to you from this.
Can you hand me my pen? I just want to write that number down. So.
Okay, so you don't forget it.
Yeah.
Well, here's a pen. I've got a piece of paper.
But what did he say? 634?
6660, I think.
6634-6660. This is kind of rough in here because all the lights are off. And we're using a flashlight just for mood, as it were.
And I'm getting an interesting mood. I'll tell you that.
That's true.
Every light in the studio is off.
Except the indicator lights.
The electronic lights.
The on-the-air light. The meter lights. And
the time. In little digital numbers, and so is the temperature. 7 degrees outside. It's 112.
7 degrees Celsius. That comes out to be about 44 Fahrenheit. About that. Something like that. I think I'm getting good at that, by the way, converting into Celsius.
Well, hopefully it's a talent we'll be able to use for a long time.
Yeah.
But we'd like you to keep some suggestions in mind. Give us a call a little bit later on. We're going to go into a little bit of music and then into the talk.
Yeah.
By Dr. Helen Caldicott. Feel free to give us a call when we're not on the air. 246-7901.
Thanks.
Area code 516.
That's true. The Voice of Long Island over WUSB.
Stony Brook. 13 minutes after 1 o'clock.
I'm Mike Uhas.
And I'm Eric Worley.
Thank you. beautiful church in the face of God. I was speaking to Rabbi Bierman just now. Do we believe in God or don't we? Do you know a nuclear war would convert this to radioactive fallout? Would convert Europe with churches full of churches like this to radioactive fallout? Our heritage, let alone preventing more babies being born in the world ever. And what do? Well, I talk to audiences about nuclear war, and they say to me, you've made me feel awful, they say. Then they say, you tell me what to do. And I say, you jump at yourself. It's appropriate that you feel awful. Jesus said the only way to grow, he said, blessed are they that weep. That's the way to spiritual growth and fulfillment, to learn about yourselves and help each other. Well, where are we? We have a terminally ill planet infected with lethal microbes which are metastasizing rapidly. That's what a cancer does. You know about the history of this terminal illness. You've all read about it. You know about the physical examination of this patient. That means when you take the patient's clothes off, lie them on the bench and feel their tummy, listen to their chest, percuss their lungs. We have 30 to 35,000 nuclear weapons, and the Pentagon says there are only 5,000 worthwhile targets. In the Soviet Union, that's enough to overkill every Russian person 40 times. And the other day I saw a bumper sticker which said, God bless America. All the Russian people are the sons and daughters of God. Russia has enough. Russia has 20,000 hydrogen bombs, enough to overkill every one of you 20 times. When there's a nuclear war, Star Wars is not a fiction. It will be reality. Because, you see, these hydrogen bombs are stars. We've captured the energy of the stars. It will look like Star Wars from space for a few minutes, and then it will go out and will look like Mars.
Even though Dr. Helen Caldicott believes the probability of a nuclear war in our lifetime is growing, she takes hope from the increasing outspokenness against the arms race of many American churches and synagogues.
I found this in the London Guardian. It's titled Reagan's War Vision, Cartoons, like Mickey Mouse, of atomic explosions, aeroplanes, and warships have been used to help President Reagan grasp the options for U.S. military spending. Visual aids were taken to the White House by Caspar Weinberger. The authoritative Armed Forces Journal tells how Pentagon staff were ordered to revamp the usual tables and graphs on budget proposals. One chart showed different sized mushroom clouds, the smallest representing the strategic forces of President Jimmy Carter, and the two bigger ones, the alternatives, being discussed by the Reagan administration. Programs for the tactical air forces were depicted for the president by different sizes and shapes of aeroplanes. A cartoon rendition of a fighter bomber, one the same size but loaded with bombs under its wings, and a third with its nose missing. Devising the cartoons proved arduous, and Pentagon action staff have had to work overtime. What's the prognosis of this terminally ill planet? It's grim. Will we survive the next 4 years? Medically, you'd have to say it is doubtful. But the thing that gives me such hope is the churches. And I'd just like to say it's such a privilege, Bill, to be speaking in this place here, this beautiful, beautiful church that I've admired all my life. And speaking from the pulpit, really, in the presence of God, this is the ultimate religious issue. Because what is our responsibility towards God? To continue evolution. For more babies to be born. There aren't communist babies and capitalist babies. A baby is a baby is a baby. And I'd just like to close by reading part of the speech from Reverend Hunthausen, the Archbishop Hunthausen of Seattle. He said, as followers of Christ, we need to take up our cross in the nuclear age. I believe that one obvious meaning of the cross is unilateral disarmament. Jesus' acceptance of the cross, rather than the sword raised in his defense, is the gospel statement of unilateral disarmament. We are called to follow. Our security as people of faith lies not in demonic weapons which threaten all life on earth. Our security is in a loving, caring God. We must dismantle our weapons of terror and place our reliance on God. I am told by some that unilateral disarmament in the face of atheistic communism is insane. I find myself observing that nuclear armament by anyone is itself atheistic and anything but sane. I'm also told that the choice of unilateral disarmament is a political impossibility in this country. If so, perhaps the reason is that we have forgotten what it would be like to act out of faith. But I speak here of that choice not as a political platform, it might not win elections, but as a moral imperative for followers of Christ. A choice has been put before us. Anyone who wants to save one's own life by nuclear arms will lose it. But anyone who loses one's life by giving up those arms for Jesus' sake and for the sake of the gospel of love will save it. Thank you.
The music you're hearing in the background is that of Walter Carlos, who now goes by the name of Wendy Carlos.
That's correct, and we heard before that from Dr. Helen Caldicott from Physicians for Social Responsibility. That came off a program from the Longhorn Radio Network, Consider the Alternatives, which is heard every Thursday night at, actually Thursday afternoon at 2:30.
Right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
I thought that was really excellent.
When was that recorded?
It was recorded
maybe a couple of weeks ago.
At least a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't indicate on this piece of paper when it was recorded, but it was some a disarmament convention or some similar thing.
Because I remember in the news a couple of weeks ago on one of the television stations, they had a group of physicians and scientists, I guess, and I was wondering if it's the same group that she belongs to.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Issues were identical, so...
I'm sure I've... Her voice sounds very familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know her name, but I think she is quite famous for giving...
Who, Helen Caldicott?
Yeah.
Then you do know her name.
Well, I know her name now. She's a very powerful speaker.
She is. And she makes sense, too.
And quite moving as well. It's very...
As Rita Marley would say.
Yeah.
Makes sense, teacher.
Definitely. Makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Well, this sounds so depressing, though.
It does. Well, it doesn't have to be, you see.
The end of the world doesn't have to be depressing?
It doesn't have to be the end of the world.
Oh.
You see, a lot of us aren't realizing the gravity of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Yeah.
It's a pretty heavy thing we're talking about.
It certainly is.
And we have to use some sort of discretion when we're dealing with such things as throwing nuclear bombs all over the place.
Now, did she mention figures of how many nuclear bombs we have and how many Russians it could kill? I think, what did it say, well, we could kill every Russian 40 times.
And they could kill us 20 times. So I guess we're probably winning. I don't know. It doesn't really matter at that point who wins, and I can't believe there are people around who actually think that it does.
Mm.
It's really kind of half-assed.
Certainly nobody wins.
It's really half-assed, and you think that one of those people is your own president.
But, Eric, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with this at all. I personally look at the good side of things. I say, well, this will never happen. Because how could it? I mean, we got to give our leaders some credit. Don't you think?
Well, it's, I don't know.
So I think,
why?
Well, cause it hasn't happened yet. That's why. And, you know. Well, in any event, do you think we should just, like, move on to other things the rest of the evening? We've got the Tripod Family coming up.
That's true. We do have more happy things, I guess.
Yeah. What's happening with the Tripod?
But I don't want to end this on a negative note.
I'm not. I'm saying I'm very
you're saying
about
no,
it.
You're saying,
yeah, and don't shine that flashlight in my eye.
You're saying forget about it. Don't think about it. And it won't happen. But you can't do that.
I guess you're right. I guess I am somewhat saying that, aren't I?
That's not a solution. That's a cop out.
It is a cop out.
And we can't cop out of something like this.
So you want to demilitarize? Is that the idea?
Well, I don't know. Definitely we have to demilitarize to some extent.
Okay.
And just how fast we go about it is up to everyone concerned.
Well, what do you think? Maybe 20, 30 years? Is that too long? Or is that too short?
I don't know. It depends how much time we have left.
Hmm.
At this point, if we continue at this rate, it won't be long.
Hmm. That's for sure. If you'd like to make your feelings known to us, at least,
246-799-901.
And we'll pass your feelings along to anybody who might be listening tonight. With the voice of Long Island, Mike Juhas here.
Eric Corley there.
And getting into some music, this time from Barrett Hersey.
Yes.
because the tripods will be in just a matter of seconds.
Radio Free Long Island, in litigation with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, proudly presents the adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. When we left our friends last time, Kathy had just announced her plans to run for town council, and as we look in on them in their suburban Long Island home, Howard and Pop are trying to convince her not to do that.
Kathy, what on earth are you talking about? It's one thing to be concerned about things and to want to get involved, but running for town council?
Well, I know you think it's crazy, Howard, but it means so much to me. I've been a simple housewife for too long. Oh. I want to get out there and meet people and give public speeches and help save the Pine Barrens and just make Long Island a better place for everybody.
Oh, I admire your ambition, but let's be realistic about this.
Yeah, you just can't go out campaigning like Ed Koch.
Yeah.
Tripods have never been politicians.
Well, it's not that so much, Pop. Where's the money for all of this going to come from? Not to mention the time factor. We just got back from France, remember, and there's an awful lot for us to catch up on.
Now, look here, Howard, and you too, Pop. I'm not running for president or governor or something. This campaign isn't going to cost that much money.
Huh,
and it's not going to take up all my time, that's for sure. Oh, I wish you'd stop trying to convince me not to go through with this. I've given the matter a very serious lot of thought.
Thought? When did you think about this, Kathy? We've only been home for less than half an hour.
And we've been talking about this for 25 minutes!
That doesn't sound to me like you've thought this over at all. It sounds like another of your impulsive projects.
Well, regardless of what either of you think, I do have an occasional thought all by myself. I was thinking about this on the plane home. And on the boat to France. And while we were in the sewers of Nice.
Oh, really?
Yes, I've thought about it a lot. An awful lot, Howard. And I don't care what either of you say. I'm going to run for town council.
She seems pretty set on that, Pop. I don't think we're going to change her mind this time.
No, she's just stubborn, that's all. I don't know what's wrong with women today. Oh, geez. Oh, your mother was never like that, you know.
Huh?
Now, there was a woman who listened when you spoke. Didn't give you any back talk. Boy, those were the days.
Well, I think we're past those days, Pop. I really don't have any objections to Kathy embarking on a brand new career. I just want to make sure she's not making a rash decision.
I really wish you'd have some faith in me. I know what I'm doing, and I've done this before, too, in high school. I ran for senior class treasurer, and I won it, too. Huh, it was a landslide.
Yeah, but this isn't quite the same, Kathy.
Oh, I know it isn't the same thing. But at least I'm not going into this with my eyes closed, and I'll tell you two something. I intend to make some changes around this here place. Big changes.
Oh.
I'm going to lower taxes and save the Pine Barrens and improve the county road system. And that's only the beginning.
Kathy, do you know how long it takes to accomplish those kind of things?
Hundreds of years.
Right. Well, maybe not hundreds of years, but a few anyway.
I don't care. I'm patient. And I'm sick and tired of sitting around in my suburban home waiting for things to happen. And I'm going to make them happen myself. I'll voice my feelings. I'll stand up and speak.
Oh, baby, quiet.
Howard found it all. There he goes again. If it isn't one thing, it's another.
You've got to get rid of that dog. He's causing more problems.
Oh, no.
Could you calm him down, Pop? What was that magic word, anyhow?
Oh, I keep forgetting it. Something that's in our closet.
Light bulbs?
No. It was something else.
All golf clubs?
Carpet sweeper?
Vacuum cleaner?
I remember! Coat hanger!
Oh, very good, Pop. Could you get the door now?
Oh, yeah, I suppose. I wonder who that is anyway.
So, Kathy, just don't put the cart before the horse. Politics isn't all fun and glory, you know.
Oh, I know that, Howard. I wasn't born yesterday, after all. I have a genuine feeling for humanity.
Well, if you really mean it, I guess you're doing the right thing. But you're going to be really busy.
Hey! Look who's here! It's Victor!
Victor! Victor, why, we haven't seen you in months.
Where did you disappear to all of this time?
Hey, Howard. Hey, Kathy. I've been away on a round-the-world cruise. And I just got back a few minutes ago.
Really? That's very funny. We just got back from France.
That is funny.
I don't see anything funny about it.
I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to anyone because I thought I was leaving a month later. It's a good thing I checked my ticket stub. and I only have 3 hours to pack for a six-month trip.
Boy, I thought we had a lot of catching up to do. You're going to be busy for the next couple of days.
Yes, yes. Well, what's been happening anyway?
Did you hear about Charlie?
No. Well, what about him?
Oh, it was awful, Victor. He was shot right here in our house while we were away.
I don't say.
Oh, yes, we do. And I think they were out to get me.
Well, we don't know about that, Pop. But there's no point getting paranoid. Anyway, he's at the Amalgamated Hospital now.
Yeah, yeah, he's going to be all right. But he'll have to stay there for a while. And I don't know if he's going to get accustomed to that nursing staff they have there.
Something. That's really something. It's getting so you can't walk the streets anymore.
Yeah, and even stay in your own house. Jeez, I don't know where the human race is going.
Uh-oh, she's getting ideological again.
Yes, Victor, Kathy's taking it to her head that she's going to run for the town council. Isn't that the silliest thing you've ever heard?
Town council, huh?
Victor, you look pale.
What? I'm all right.
What's that paper in your hand?
Oh, this? Yeah, you don't want to see that.
Oh, yes, we do. What is it?
It's a petition to get me nominated for the town council.
And so it turns out that Kathy and Victor have the exact same plans for running for town council. You want to be with us next time when we'll hear Howard say,
I wonder if I'm a registered voter.
That's next time on the exciting adventures of the Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
WUSB, Stony Brook.
201. You are tuned to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's a quick look at the news headlines. Mount St. Helens has blown its top once again. Happened on Friday night in the Washington State volcano, emitted a cloud of ash and steam that rose up 45,000 feet from the lip of the crater. And a state emergency services spokesman said the cloud was moving toward Oregon, but not over any population centers. Debris from the eruption is expected to flood a nearby river. Police living along the river were warned to take precautionary measures. Even so, the mud flows aren't expected to be as bad as the ones of May 1980, when Mount St. Helens had its biggest eruption in decades. An Illinois National Guard plane crashed in the northern part of that state Friday night. The KC-135, which is about the size of a Boeing 707, was carrying a crew of 7 and 13 passengers. Police said it appeared there are no survivors. Indiana residents and businesses have been lending a hand to flood-ravaged Fort Wayne. They've donated food and clothing, shelter to the homeless, and muscle to help fortify the dikes holding back the city's three rivers. And American journalists in El Salvador are pretty much conducting business as usual following the death of four Dutch colleagues. An Associated Press spot check found the U.S. media making no special arrangements for its people in El Salvador. In Stony Brook right now, it's 6 degrees Celsius, 43 in the Fahrenheit scale. Expecting it to remain partly cloudy and cool throughout the morning hours. Lows will get down to around 35. Cloudy tomorrow with occasional rain developing in the afternoon and continuing into tomorrow night. High tomorrow 40 to 45, and the low tomorrow night near 40. Chance of rain is 80% tomorrow, and the outlook for Sunday, partly cloudy, milder, with a chance of some evening showers. Highs will be 50 to 55. Once again, 6 degrees right now in Stony Brook, 43 on the Fahrenheit scale. I'm Eric Corley along with Mike Juhas. This is the voice of Long Island. Time now for our 2 o'clock album side. And this week, since we're discussing worldly topics, nuclear topics, that kind of thing, I thought it would be kind of nice to go back in time to when things that are happening today were happening before. And what better way to look at the way we looked than through television? Well, maybe radio is better, but I think television sums it up pretty interestingly. We have an album here called The Age of Television. Milton Berle, Hugh Downs, Arlene Francis, and all the folks out there in television land, a nostalgic trip down video lane via sight and sound. From Howdy Doody to Apollo 15, it's all right here. We're going to hear all sorts of interesting things, such as the first moonwalk, Howdy Doody time, President Truman, Roy Rogers, and the All-Star Review, with Jackie Gleason, Sid Caesar, Ernie Kovacs, Groucho Marx, and, well, let's not talk about it any longer. 4 minutes after 2 o'clock, let's go into the age of television.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
We used to make jokes about it in the 50s. Pretty soon we'll be doing a show from the moon. You know, we used to laugh at it. But we actually saw it.
America's finest cigarettes presents
by George, I've counted 11 antennas on the way downtown. Look at that house with three on it. They're ruining the architecture.
F.A. Sanabria with the American Television Company in 1929 approached me at the Palace Theater in Chicago. I was appearing there. Sanabria said that he was having a test of television. And we knew what television was, but we didn't.
Oh, well, just a fad.
And I walked in the studio, which was very tiny, and they had makeup on us like you'd think we were Theda Bara or Louise Glaum or somebody.
Television will pass, just like the horse and buggy.
And we had black lipstick, and it was sort of indirect lighting, completely indirect.
When I first came to Chicago, I was asked to be on an experimental station here, and I went into a studio that not far from where we're sitting now and did a 15-minute newscast in a little bitty studio that was refrigerated down to about 50 degrees. I wondered why. It's really chilly in here. I found out why. When they turned that bank of lights on that was like one of the racks of lights they got up in a night baseball field, the temperature went up to 120 immediately, and by the time I finished the newscast, I think I'd soaked through my jacket, which was a good thing because it kept it from catching fire, which it otherwise would have done.
And we did a show which was watched by about four people, because that's all who could afford the set.
Hello, Peter.
Gildersleeve, what can I do for you this morning?
Phoebe, I see you have a television set.
That's what everybody says he comes in here. Yes, they're showing pictures of Niagara Falls.
I have pictures of Niagara Falls on my stereoscope.
Not with the water running.
Phoebe, what kind of a picture do you get?
Well, let's take a look.
Say, kids, what time is it? Well, howdy, Mr. Duty. And boys and girls at home and kids in the gallery, let's go!
I present to you Harriet Truman, the present and the next president of the United States.
I'll say you, the next 4 years, be a Democrat in the White House, and you're looking at
it. And then, of course, came those golden days of television.
Sold American scientific tests prove Lucky Strike is milder than any other principal brand of cigarettes. That fact is verified by an independent consulting laboratory with more than 15 years' experience in cigarette research. Let your own taste and throat be the judge. For smoothness and mildness, there's never a rough puff in a Lucky Strike. Yes, prove to yourself what scientific tests prove. Lucky Strike is milder than any other principal brand of cigarettes. Get a carton of Lucky's today. Lucky Strike presents your Hit Parade. The Lucky Seven Songs of the Week with Jeff Clark, Eileen Wilson, the Hit Paraders, and Raymond Scott and the Lucky Strike Orchestra.
They were trying out some show, and it was during the World Series when Bobby Thompson hit that famous home run.
They're going crazy! They're going crazy! Hey, ho!
At the time, there were two Chicago originations, Cooper Finale to the network, and Hawkins Falls, which was a soap opera, one of the first ones. And I was the announcer on both of them. And did commercials on Hawkins Falls. And I think I did some commercials with Cooper Franoli, but I was their announcer, and on occasion would go in and speak to Cooper Franoli and those people.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that. We had the Cucapolitan players on the home program a couple of times, Bert Tilstrom and Fran, and the One-Tooth Dragon. But I didn't realize that he had done that show in Chicago. Well, he's interested, as you know, in just about everything.
Heaven knows I plead guilty to being interested in a lot of things. But, you know, when you look at some things I've pursued with some vigor and effort. But when you look at it really honestly, I'm kind of the world's champion dilettante. I'm really the jack of all trades and master of none.
But he was a gentleman, and that made it very attractive in daytime television.
I can remember MCs with 100 front teeth that would stand there and grin at somebody in a wheelchair.
Get your $90. Also, a little surprise right now to sort of let you relax for the last couple of questions, Ms. Palatino. Martin Bird of the Baby Butler Company, New York City, is going to send you a twin-size Baby Butler safety feeding table. So you're striking it rich.
Hey, isn't that nice? Oh, well, that's fine. That's a happy day so far here. We have $90, and we have that.
I think the industry has grown up somewhat from that.
Yes, what are we talking about?
We're deciding where to put the television set.
Somebody buying a television set?
Yeah, you. Aren't you?
You know, people are funny. Every time they open their mouths, they reveal something. I mean, besides their teeth. You'll know in a minute what I mean.
Right now in this country, there is one television set for every 1 2/3 persons. What that other 1/3 of a guy is looking at, I will probably never know. But,
Mr. Peavy's just like everybody else who has a new set.
Yeah, when are we getting one?
Leroy, we've led orderly lives up to this point. If we buy a television set, we'll spend every minute in front of it, eating our meals with cowboys and Indians, staying up all night watching.
Oh, boy, when do we get it?
Westerns are our Iliad and Odyssey. The idea and literature about moving the frontier from the Atlantic to the Pacific and the building of this nation, that is our folk history, and it will never go away. And I've always been amused when people think that it's temporary. Back in the days when Bill Boyd bought up the Hopalong Cassidy pictures and made himself a small fortune of airing them on television.
What happened in television was that when we got enough money to make Western movies, in the second stage, because even when I was there, I had Hopalong Cassidy and Roy Rogers and Gene Autry.
And here he is in person, the king of the cowboys, Roy Rogers.
Well, howdy, folks.
But when we got to having our Westerns done in Hollywood, the popularity of a couple of those shows meant that all three networks went out and bought everything they could find with horses.
Going somewhere, Doc?
What's the meaning of this?
You're under arrest for practicing medicine without a license. Arson, conspiracy, kidnapping, and attempted murder.
No, you're crazy. I admit I'm not a bona fide physician.
Stop acting, Doc. Listen, talk.
Well, no court to take his word against mine. And you can't prove that...
But I can. Where did you learn that song you were just whistling?
Huh? Oh, it's an old tune. Everybody knows it.
Like fun they do, that's my song. I composed it. Sort of. The only way you could have known it was to send it to Shed a Jingle Bob.
Okay, you win.
Don't be foolish, Doc. Put the handcuffs on him, Pat.
But I did feel deep down, and it is true, that Americans, their heritage is the saga of the West.
Oh, yeah?
Now, wait a minute.
We're arguing about what we'll watch, and we don't even have a set. I'm not spending hundreds of dollars just to buy a gadget that starts arguing. Now let everybody watch for dinner.
And you know, I sort of wish I lived in those days again. You and I see a lot of Western movies. You hear about six shooters and tough hombres. Sometimes maybe you ask yourself, did those things really happen back in the old days? Well, boy, you can bet your boots they did.
How do you like that?
Say, before you go, don't you want to wave to your mother, you know, like they do in the roller derby, you know, get up and wave to your mother like that?
Mama doesn't look at television anymore.
Oh, she doesn't? What does she do for entertainment?
Well, Mama looks out the window.
Oh, looking out the window is better than television?
Mama says there's more going on, and it doesn't stop every 2 minutes for commercials.
Always leave them laughing when you say goodbye, Cortland.
Funny is funny. Funny not is funny not. What is old is new. What is new is old. Now, let me explain what I mean. Yeah, it's a lovely suit. Beautiful. Beautiful. Who shines it for you?
Now, never mind the suit. You can't talk to me like a busboy, Mr. Gleason. After all, I am a big star.
You are a big star.
Yes.
Well, this might astound you to know, but on my program on Friday night, 10 million people see me.
That is your story. I hear that you are on the lam from the Keep Alba Committee, and you are using your show as a hideout.
Do you know, it's very odd that among performers, only the comedians as a class will use euphemistic terms like, I'll kill them. You know, meaning the audience will love them. Or, what's the other one that they did?
And if a joke bombed, it bombed.
Yeah. That shows the comedians and the emotional approach that makes a person go into the business.
Stubborn! Dear Mr. Question Man, I am studying science in high school. I am quite puzzled by this phenomenon. It is well known that the earth is round like a ball. Therefore, some people must be walking on it upside down. Why is it that these people do not fall off?
You have stated a common misconception. People are falling off all the time.
Well, that seems to be all the time we have for Mr. Question Man. Be sure to join us again when Mr. Question Man will answer such questions as, are Dave Garraway's those little seeds on rye bread? Is it proper to drink coffee in a T-shirt? Do they use real iodine on the medic? Does the DC-7 eat its young? And in a fair fight, could Rocky Marciano beat Charles Coburn?
If the peoples of the world are to conduct an intelligent search for peace,
I started in show business doing an amateur imitation of Charlie Chaplin. I put on a pair of my father's trousers and his coat, which was maybe 20 sizes too big for me, and I cut up my mother's little fur piece from the muff she had, and I got some mucilage and made a Charlie Chaplin mustache. It was my father's derby and a cane, which my father used to have. And I paraded the streets in Bronx in this Charlie Chaplin costume. So that was the beginning. And then I appeared in motion pictures. I was the kid in Tilly's Punctured Romance with Charlie Chaplin and Marie Dressler in 1914. Then in 1924, I got too tall. So after being a child star and playing the Palace Theater, I had to start all over. A man by the name of Myron Kirk asked me to come over to the agency. They wanted to speak to me because they wanted to start this new medium. And they said that the Texas company, Texaco, wanted to go on at NBC at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Oh, by the way, while the Texaco show was on from 48 to 54, there were 110 shows placed opposite us that went off, except Bishop Fulton J. Sheen was on the Dumont Network. He did much better than me, because let's face it, he had much better writers. Mark and Luke. While I was on for Texaco, Bishop Sheen and I had the same sponsor, Sky Chief.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you're introducing America's number one television star, who gets his nose into everybody's act, your Cyrano de Bergerac, Milton Berle!
One hand. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't laugh, lady. You and I go to the same plastic surgeon.
Got your old nose.
I like it. It's my basketball nose. I just had it fixed.
I reached millions of people who fortunately couldn't reach me. There was one laugh that projected out of the top of them all. That was my mother. And if people didn't laugh that sat next to her, she used to shove them with the arm and say, "Laugh it up. It's my son. That's my son." She was there at every show. She was a great gal.
Sure you ain't seen this book before?
No, sir.
Well, you're doing pretty good for two lessons. But now, kid, get a load of this. I'm going to show you the toughest character of them all. You're going to find him wherever you see the sign. The name is Moffat. That's Texaco's tough, longer-lasting lubricant that gives you confidence.
We don't need a TV set. Why spend all that money?
Well, that's what I said.
We want to see TV. We can go to somebody else's house and watch. Pretty soon, everybody will have one but us. They'll be televising the baseball games this summer.
They will?
You don't want to sit in your easy chair watching a baseball game. You can read about it the next day in the paper after everybody else has seen it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, how does it end? Did they get a TV set or not?
No, you have to play the other side to find out.
Oh, no. No, I don't think that's true.
Oh, no?
Because on the other side, it's the inauguration of President Kennedy.
Can I see the other side?
That doesn't answer the question. I mean, I'm sure they eventually did get a TV set. I mean, everyone did after a while.
Well, they pop in back and forth, right?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
But I don't think they're going to pop in at the place they popped out.
That's too bad.
Well, it's one of the things we'll have to live with.
Hmm.
Did you watch much television back? Well, of course, you weren't around then, but do you remember any?
I was only 60s? A gleam in my father's eye. In the mid-60s, yeah.
Yeah, I remember commercials, I think, more than I remember television. Which is kind of frightening.
Yes.
It is. I remember cigarette commercials.
Yeah, I remember cigarette commercials, yeah. Too.
Remember, what was it? What was the one where there were cowboys all over the place? Winston? Was that, no,
Marlboro.
Marlboro, that's it.
Come to where the flavor is. Hey, that's very interesting that you should mention that, because what do you have queued up? But Indian-type music, American Indian music.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't be too happy with Marlboro commercials, I'm sure.
Yeah. Or the cowboys that go with them, or...
That's right.
Yeah,
The mid-60s. The back of this album is made up just like a page from TV Guide.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange?
It certainly is.
And they have Peter Pan and Ed Sullivan and The Tonight Show with Jack Parr and The Tonight
Peter
Show
Pan
with Johnny Carson.
Peter Pan is a USB engineer.
That's right, for Sino 78.
Right.
Our Chinese music program every Sunday afternoon at 5.
Right.
But he's also, Peter Pan is also a character in a famous play or motion picture or what have you.
Yeah. And Tinkerbell,
and were there other characters too?
Yeah, it must have been. I don't remember.
If I Love Lucy and the Dick Van Dyke Show, and President Johnson's speech in the Beverly Hillbillies.
Well, that's on the other side. Oh, the Beverly Hillbillies are on there?
The Secret Storm, Kip and Mrs. Town plan a jailbreak while... Well, dot, dot, dot.
That's really too bad that we're not going to hear that. Could you bring this down just a little bit?
Oh, certainly.
Yes, that's somewhat more, I think.
Guiding Light?
Better. Yeah, a little better. The Guiding Light.
Mama and Papa Bauer decide to run off to Majorca where... dot, dot, dot.
Majorca?
Yeah.
Mallorca.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
The doctors, Dr. Carl Henricks and Martha, have formed a commune. That's interesting. All these soap operas aren't around anymore. Is the Guiding Light still on? I think
of course
that,
it is, yeah.
That one's still on. Okay, but The Secret Storm and... My grandmother always watched The Secret Storm.
Hmm.
It was a tradition. And nobody dared come anywhere near the TV set. 4 o'clock, Channel 2. Hey, Secret Storm.
What's on 4 o'clock, Channel 2?
Well, that's what used to be on.
Now?
Oh, I don't know. Some stupid game show. I told you last week when I was sick I almost broke my TV set.
No.
Well, it's awful.
Hmm.
If you don't have access to all the different things that cable brings you, such as test patterns and wailing sirens and things like that, all the new innovative stuff, you get bored.
Yeah.
You get disgusted.
Yeah. Such is life.
You'd rather be violently ill than be in front of a TV set. But looking back on it, looking back on the 50s and the 60s, it's a nice thing to do.
Yeah, it's good to go back and reminisce about the evolution of television every now and again.
But right now, I can't see anybody in 20 years reminiscing about the stuff that's on now. I'm not counting non-commercial TV. Which incidentally brings up another point. Did you read in the paper this week where PBS is thinking of having commercials? In fact, they're going to try it in 5 markets, including New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's really awful.
Yeah. It certainly is.
You're just full of good conversation tonight.
So are you.
Thank you.
Would you want to hear a commercial on USB?
I would fight to the death against something like that.
Mm.
Although I'm certain the day is coming when the FCC will deregulate non-commercial radio.
Are we regulated at all?
Well, as far as having commercials, we are.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Not being allowed to have commercials, but that's what makes us so unique.
That's right.
The fact that we don't have to worry about commercials.
And that we can play such terrible music as this.
As what we're about to play now.
Yeah.
This. Ooh, it's off.
Ah.
many battles have been won just by sitting with the sun. Love is still a gentle tune. Keep on riding with the moon. When I have my heart in tow, I will ride the buffalo. I will ride till days are done. Oh, the silence of the sun. See the whispers of the moon. Love is still a gentle, gentle tune. Hold on, dear him. He will lead you to the end. He will be your loving friend. Just before the world began, there was just a mountain man. Since the words there have been two, woe the valley of the moon. Since the sun began to play, we must return the same old way. From the valley of the moon to the mountain of the sun. From the cradle of the moon to the temple of the sun. Hold on to him. He will lead you to the end. He will be your loving friend. I will track till times are done the golden footsteps of the sun. I will track the times of you or the tresses of the moon, the silver tresses of the moon. When I have my heart in tow, I'll ride the buffalo. I will ride till days are done. Woe the silence of the sun. In the whispers of the moon, love is still a gentle, gentle tune. Hold on to him. He will lead you to the end. He will be your loving friend. When you do the best you can, you will be a mountain man. Many battles have been won just by sitting with the sun. Keep on sitting in the sun.
It's springtime once again, and if you're a motorist on Long Island, or in southern Connecticut or Westchester, you've probably encountered some of the seasonal perils known as potholes. We here at Radio Free Long Island know how it hurts upon entering one of these craters, but the subject of this little essay is not potholes, but antholes. The damage done to your automobile by antholes is insignificant compared to potholes, but we'd like to look at the situation from another perspective, the ants. The common road ant is a true miracle of nature. Being able to lift 83 times its own weight is one well-known attribute of the ant, but few of us stop to think of the remarkable society these tiny creatures have created. Indeed, the entire colony, from the worker way on up to the king and queen ant, have a little city under that little mound of dirt. But the downfall of the road ant is its habit of building their homes in the path of vehicular traffic, hence the designation road ant. Entire colonies have been lost when a stray subcompact trespassed on an anthole. So the folks here at Radio Free Long Island ask you, please, please drive carefully and save the ants.
Thank you. Thank you. everyone. Do you know this could be the year that New York State finally gets a bottle bill? I'm Brian Hasbrook, inviting you to join me this Monday at 6 p.m. for the Public Interest Radio Show. My guest will be Susan Weber of the New York Public Interest Research Group. She'll be talking about her efforts to organize a statewide bottle bill march to dramatize public support for the legislation. Won't you join us this Monday at 6 on WUSB?
And oh, but she was handsome with me, tragic and magic and nuns and I. With my tragic and magic and I go. Where are you gone, my bonny wee lass? Where are you gone, my bonny? White man, Annie, she answered me, got a message for me, Manny. With me, tragic and magic and nuns and I. With my tragic and magic and I go. Oh, what's your age, my bonny wee lass? Oh, what's your age, my honey? White man, Annie, she answered me, I'll be 16 come next Sunday. With me, tragic and magic and nuns and I. With my tragic and magic and I go. Oh, where do you live, my bonny wee lass? Oh, where do you live, my bonny? White man, Annie, she answered me, we're down in yonder valley. chicken, not chicken, not tonight. With my chicken, not chicken, night, oh.
2:53 a.m. In the morning on a Saturday.
The voice of Long Island is coming to a conclusion.
A screeching halt. And all sorts of other things will be taking you through the radio-free weekend.
That's right. Let's give a quick rundown. Anthony White's up next till 7. 7 o'clock comes Israel Magazine. 7:30 is the Italian Hit Parade. 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
The debut, the radio debut is Gordon Healy in his own program of irreverence and irrelevance.
At 11 o'clock, and it's brand new time, the African Beat.
With your host, Murray.
And at 12 o'clock...
Murray Gordon.
Murray Gordon. 12 o'clock, Lista Hugh and Lowe.
With your reggae alternative programming.
That takes you until 3:30.
When Filipito Palacios comes in with...
Salsa.
Nueva.
Ya.
Yao. Hola.
6 o'clock, we have Haitian music.
Haitian cuisine with Yevero Mark. 7 o'clock brings us classical music.
Right after the concert billboard.
Right, who's going to be the classical announcer tonight?
I believe Jim Wiener will be in today.
James Wiener will be in, perhaps.
And that takes you up until 10, when we have NPR's
Jazz Alive, made possible in part through funding by
the Graduate Student Organization.
12 o'clock brings you either Barry Reagan or Steve Below Bob Lieberg. I'm not too sure.
Something like that.
Then at 3 o'clock on Sunday morning,
Andy Lish and the Morning Star.
Morning Star programming. It's interesting. That's an interesting program. And then
I think we've gone far enough.
No. We're not done with the weekend yet.
Oh, boy.
And then, besides, you were the one who said, well, we gotta find something to talk about.
Well, why don't we, read the phone book if we're going to do that?
Okay, go get the phone book.
I knew he was going to take me seriously.
Okay, right after Andy Lish and his program, Morning Star, Bill McKenzie will be in.
Yes, with good news.
And what time is that?
I believe that goes on at 6:30.
Till 7?
Until 7:30, I believe.
And then there'll be a breakfast special?
Yes, a half-hour special of who knows what.
Then Charlie Backfish and his heavy metal program for Sunday morning.
From 8 to 12.
At 12 o'clock,
we have the sports section.
Or sports roundup, or whatever.
Sports section is the name of the program. Brand new program. Hour long roundup of the week's sports. National, local, international.
And then at 1 o'clock, India Hour with Prasad Varanasi. And 2 o'clock till 5, 2 to 2:01, Walt Scratch. And at 5,
Sino 78.
Hosted by a whole bunch of people.
A whole bunch of people coming here every week. It's Chinese music and talk and all kinds of things.
Right.
6 o'clock.
You know, we could probably play their tape backwards and nobody would know the difference.
They would.
Yeah, that's true.
A silly statement made by a true barbarian. But anyway, 6 o'clock, we have
National Radio Theater.
With the play of the week or whatever is coming. There's a schedule around here somewhere. But
7 o'clock, Brian Dinger and his classical program for our Sunday evening. 10 o'clock,
The Beat
with Mike
Girardo.
12 o'clock, News of the Week with Barry Reagan and crew.
News and Views.
And then 1 o'clock, there's a concert. This one recorded in 1973, of October 1973, I believe October 17th. It'd be Janice Ian.
Janice Ian, right here at Stony Brook.
That's right. And then we have all sorts of good music.
Joe Evangelista at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, until
7 o'clock.
Oh, okay, this is really...
Frank Burgert Monday morning.
We can't go through our entire program schedule.
Well, let's see if we can do it, though.
No, we can't. Run into Tony's slot and
the specials are about ready to come in, though.
Are they?
Yes.
Oh, there they are.
Oh, gosh.
That means we better start rounding things up. And
yeah, Mike Uhas here. We'll be here again next week.
That's Mike Uhas, and I'm Eric Corley over here. Goodbye.
Bye.
Out of bed at 8 a.m. Out my head by 10:30. Out with mates and dates and friends. That's what I do at weekends. I can't talk and I can't walk, but I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to watch my money go. At the Locarno, no. When my feet go through the door, I know what my right arm is for. Buy a drink and call a chair. Up to the edge of the dance floor. Dancers bouncing through the night. Trying to stop or start a fight. I sit and watch the flashing lights. Moving legs in footless tights. I know how to Friday night and I come home on Saturday night. The bar gets full. I don't like life when things get dull. The hen party have saved the night. They treat themselves from drunken slack. Having fun, the dancing in. The circle round the leather bags. I go out on Friday night and I come home on Saturday morning. I go out on
WUSB, Stony Brook. Go!